this isn't one of those kind of flash in the pan moments to where, you know, it's maybe something that a few people will dabble in and a few people will get rich and others will lose money. This is a really pivotal moment, I'd say, in terms of digital currency. We don't see this going away anytime soon. So first and foremost, what I always try to tell banks when I'm asked to like talk with their boards or their executive teams are just make sure that you're getting as much information out of the, you know, the groups that you possibly can. And just making sure that you're understanding that this is going to be an impact. And this part is kind of a little rough, but whether you like it or not. And so it's something that you're going to have to address.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Elizabeth Holtrup, and it is my absolute pleasure to be joined today by Rich Perez, who comes to us from Texas Bankers Association. I'm going to read a short bio, Rich, and then we're going to launch into what I am pretty sure is going to be a pretty good discussion today. So Rich Perez is Vice President of Innovation and Digital Products at the Texas Bankers Association, where he leads the multi-state Innovation Magnet Program, helping community banks modernize through technology and strategic partnerships. With more than 20 years in financial services and digital strategy, Rich is known for translating emerging technology from AI to stablecoin into practical opportunities for banks. He is a frequent speaker and educator on innovation, digital assets, and the future of community banking. Rich, thank you for joining us today. I am really excited to have you here on the screen, on the recording. The amount of knowledge and experience you bring to TBA and to bankers nationwide honestly blows my mind when I hear about the work you do. So I'm really, really glad that you made time to join us today. To start, I always like to ask our guests to tell us a bit about themselves. Specifically, can you tell us how you got into banking and maybe what is your favorite thing about working in this industry?
Sure thing. Yeah. And first of all, like, thanks for having me today. You know, mine's an interesting story. Like so many of us, I've heard over several years that a lot of people that kind of fall into banking. And I'd say that was certainly my path as well. You know, I worked for a company that most of our bankers still know as Harlan Clark or Bearcast for about 16 years. Okay. And interestingly enough, didn't start on the direct banking side, but was working with a lot of our retail providers. But this will ring true for a lot of folks, but selling checks. So we sold a lot of personal checks, and we did that through a lot of white labels. So for a lot of the big box retailers out there, the Sam's Clubs, the Costco's, and certainly Walmart's and others. And then kind of graduated into the banking side is the way I'd say it. So spent a lot of time like creating different products and solutions on the digital front, because I will admit that even working on the Harlan Clark side that was kind of rooted in checks for so many years, we ourselves thought that checks were at the end of life, you know, when I had left there, gosh, at this point, 4 or 5 years ago. And of course, as we all know, checks are still around.
But, they are.
But yeah, it's been really exciting just kind of working the different sides of what the banks really need for their customers.
So that is really interesting to me. So essentially, you are in the business of payments, we could say, maybe. Like, even though the physical check is kind of becoming obsolete, and some bankers who work with fraud would maybe hope it could more quickly become obsolete than it has. That is really interesting to me that you literally got started in checks. So to segue, like, literally your title, you work with bankers on innovation and digital products.
Right.
This is obviously an area high in the minds of many bankers, especially community banks that are looking to stay competitive in the 21st century. What is some advice you would give to community banks as they're trying to pivot from more traditional banking, whether it's literally getting away from paper checks, but also all that innovation of products and services? How can they be more tech driven, especially community banks that don't have huge budgets or huge staff?
Right. Yeah, I think you hit on one of the key elements there for sure. And, you know, and a big reason that I joined TBA was that so many of the banks, at least in the past, were at a very large disadvantage in terms of like the money, the capital that they could spend to kind of try out and then, you know, ultimately embrace technology. I think that's changed in many ways, which is really a benefit. You know, a lot of what we try to really provide through Innovation Magnet and TBA as a whole is really the relationships that a lot of these banks need with those strategic partners to get them to that next level. So, you know, to your point of like, it's not so much like we need to hire on 17 people and sign up for $3 million over the next 24 months, which is tough for any business to do, much less a bank. But now there are strategic partners that I feel have the kind of vested interest in making sure that the banks are ultimately successful versus just making that quick buck like they used to.
Okay. That's really interesting to me. I don't know the details of some of what you do working with banks. So that third-party strategic partnership provides one of those links for me. I think that's a huge concern with bankers. They don't have the knowledge base with the hiring pool that they're working with. They don't have time to really, really dive into understanding some of these things. As a compliance professional, what I always advise banks is that you need to be aware of your third-party risk. So right. How do you work with banks to build that relationship of trust to make sure whoever they're working with is someone that they can really feel comfortable partnering with?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And you're absolutely right, because, you know, even though some of that has shifted, the element of risk has not gone away. A lot of what I think we try to provide a lot of the banks is the access to not only the information that we have, mm-hmm. but the peer network. So as a very real example, like, you know, I will tell many bankers, instead of saying that Rich has all the answers, because I certainly don't, it's more so of like, you know, hey, we're having a lot of these same conversations with hundreds of bankers around the state and nation. And so there's very rarely, from what I've seen, which is a good thing, a truly unique problem, right? And so to your point of like, you know, or when somebody's going out and looking for a new solution or an answer to a problem or question they might have, somebody has probably gone through something very similar already. So a lot of what we try to do is like give those people voices and make sure that we're kind of working as a facilitator to make sure that people are having those conversations openly. So it's going to help them kind of get down the path faster, if that makes sense.
So a theme I'm hearing from you, and this is huge for a lot of what Texas Bankers Association does, is building relationships. It sounds Absolutely. Like a lot of what you do is provide connections and help folks build relationships so that they can share knowledge, they can share resources they're using. Is that a fair way of putting it?
It's a very, very fair and accurate way of saying it, because I'd say, you know, just kind of a, you know, piggyback on that is that even on the vendor side, we work really hard to make sure that the vendors and strategic providers or partners that we're putting in front of bankers have been vetted. It's a very curated group. And so it's not just the people that are trying to, like, you know, hit their sales goal for the quarter, but it's truly people that have vested interests in the ultimate success of banks within Texas and beyond.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense to me. I obviously, working for a company associated with Texas Bankers Association, I know quite a bit about TBA. But at the same time, I'm always just fascinated to hear about the services coming out of Austin specifically that you're working on.
Sure.
I do know, so TBA not only serves Texas banks, but has such a broad national voice as well as a leader in some of this, some of the emerging issues that are facing community banks. I would love to talk a little bit about stablecoin, and you knew this was coming, right? So I know this is close to your heart. I know this is one of an emphasis that TBA has been looking at. Could you help us just talk a little bit about how bankers are navigating the developments with stablecoin, maybe what bankers need to know right now, and what should they be paying attention to as this type of currency
Sure.
develops?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. I mean, it's a very hot topic. Most of the conversations that I'm having with bankers over the last 12 months have been either on the topic of digital assets at large, mm-hmm. or of course AI, right? Because that's still
yes.
a very important one for all of us.
Yeah.
To answer your question, you know, it's the way that I like to put it for a lot of the banks is that it's something that you want to make sure that you're paying attention to, because, like, as our CEO and president will say, like, it's not going away. So this isn't one of those kind of flash in the pan moments to where, you know, it's maybe something that a few people will dabble in and a few people will get rich and others mm-hmm. will lose money. This is a really pivotal moment, I'd say, in mm-hmm. terms of like digital currency. Mm-hmm. And so we don't see this going away anytime soon. So first and foremost, what I always try to tell banks when I'm asked to like talk with their boards or their executive teams mm-hmm. are just make sure that you're getting as much information out of the, you know, the groups that you possibly can, whether it be an association, your peer groups, like we were talking about earlier, and just making sure that you're understanding that this is going to be an impact. And this part is kind of a little rough, but whether you like it or not. And so it's something that you're going to have to address. Now, at the same time, this isn't something that when, you know, I had a conversation with a bank just yesterday and they said, well, what do we need to do right now? And I said, quite frankly, you're doing it, which is like learn, continue to learn. Don't learn from just one person. Don't learn from just Rich. And I mean that. But make sure that you're getting this, you know, the varied perspectives across the network. And understanding like where there are capabilities that you should embrace and then where there are risks, right? To your point and in the seed that you sit in, because both of those are true right now in the sense that, you know, we still don't really have a very clear understanding for stablecoin specifically in the digital assets world of where this is all landing from a regulatory standpoint, as you definitely know. And so just the fact that it's changing so much week to week is why we continue to tell folks, like don't ignore it. That's the most important thing. But also don't feel like, okay, well, I've heard of a few banks doing something, so we need to go spend $3 million partner and start doing all the things now, because that's also not true.
Okay. So it's okay to play a waiting game, but banks need to be aware that this is going to be a part of banking. This is not something going away.
Absolutely.
Okay. I also know the same as you, I've heard of banks that are kind of freaking out that there's I shouldn't say freaking out, trying to be respectable, but are getting quite concerned that there's a small window to grab an edge of the industry,
right,
and that banks need to play to that competitive advantage. But it's tough to know what to do now, because as you said, right, regulations haven't fully emerged. This is essentially a new product or type of currency that really hasn't fully developed yet.
Right.
What are you telling banks about that sense of urgency, how to play to that positively without feeling too much of a rush? What's the balance there?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great way to put it, because, as it pertains to stablecoin, there have been some banks, and obviously the megas we're talking about in this case, JP Morgan Chase issued there years ago.
Yep.
And, I've been using it a lot for interbank transfers and, a lot of the real-time settlements that I think are really the largest opportunities for a lot of our banks. But interestingly enough, when we get questions around each bank, should I issue my own stablecoin? Mm-hmm. And I will say, this is a very biased answer, right? So this is a rich perspective, but my answer is 99% of the time, no.
Yep.
Because you lose and speaking of technology, there goes the lights. you lose that interoperability once you create all of these different silos through individual stablecoins by bank. Right. And so that's something that, we continue to see changing. But we here at TBA believe that the value really is around the network. And so the more we can get community banks to utilize common stablecoin as an example, as a means of interbank transfers and B2B work, then that is where the larger opportunities exist. And quite frankly, a reason that we are really trying to make sure that our banks don't run into another Zelle situation. To where everybody is now, paying the piper to the, JP Morgan Chases of the world. And not that, to be very clear that they're doing anything wrong, right? They're just taking advantage of a business opportunity.
Yep.
But most of our banks don't have the billions of dollars to invest into this new world like some of the megas do. And we don't want that to be a standing disadvantage for our banks.
So is it fair to say there's strength in numbers that if community banks can band together and network together, there could be an opportunity now to create strength of perhaps a nationwide or regional networks where community banks can maintain their independence, maintain that Main Street values, maintain independent ownership while playing to a group network in very broad terms? Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair way of putting it, because there absolutely is strength in numbers, even when we're talking about just some of the onboarding and shared, cost and shared risk, frankly, in many cases. Mm-hmm. But no different than honestly the world of just kind of the vendor curation and management side of things in general. And that, if you've got everybody doing the same thing different way, then I'll give the analogy of looking at it from a data perspective, because this is, a world of pain that I've lived myself, in previous days. Of through M&A, right, where you've got all these different systems, but there's no standard way for data to look. The same holds true for when we're talking about, something like stablecoin as a payment mechanism.
I really appreciate hearing that. So obviously you work directly with Texas banks. Is there someone commensurate? Is there kind of a national touch point? So we have folks listening all over the country. For folks who really want to get plugged in, is there an opportunity to reach out to you or reach out to other folks like you in their state bankers associations?
Sure. And I would say that, as part of Innovation Magnet, and you kind of touched on this in the intro, but we are working with some of the states in our regional area as well.
Okay.
So that's something that, we feel has a benefit and kind of embraces just what you and I are chatting about around the power of numbers in our network.
Yep.
We know that there are differences across different associations and groups in general around specific topics. But on the topic of technology like this, we really need to band together. And I think that's where we see the power in numbers. We continue to work very closely as many others do with what the ABA is doing as well. But so many of us are really just trying to make sure that we're staying in the know of like all these constant changes, like we've even seen earlier this week, so that all the information that we're sharing and even the relationships that we're building and facilitating with our bankers are going to be, and I guess the best way to put it is like, we're not just trying to make sure that everybody's hearing a myopic voice, because I think that's the opposite of what we're trying to provide, but giving access to a larger network of a diverse kind of thought leaders in the space. So that way the banks can ultimately make up their minds about what their right path is forward.
Honestly, just hearing the details of some of your work is giving me a little bit more optimism and hope. I have assumed that the community banks will be navigating these waters, but you know, when I talk to banks, there is this level of uncertainty and concern. Many community banks, brick and mortar banks, just aren't super well positioned to transfer operations very quickly. And there has been that concern that we need to act quickly. So I'm feeling very excited and optimistic after hearing just kind of the broad overview of what you're working with banks, because to me, this seems very doable. Now, of course, we need big thinking, good thought leaders, innovation. But we know if there's one thing community banking has, it has bright minds. Main Street, small towns, whatever you're working with, it has bright minds. So I'm really excited hearing just a broad overview of what you're talking about. Thank you for sharing that. Could we pivot for just a minute? And I would love to hear your thoughts on AI as well. Give me some optimism about AI, because there's so many thoughts out there and there is some concern as well. So
interestingly enough, the more and more that I've had conversations on these kind of two broad topics, the more I realize like the general adoption and some of the fears surrounding them is actually very similar. And so like, you know, really what I mean by that is if you remember, you know, about maybe 18 to 24 months ago when this whole AI thing was dropped and, you know, so many people thought like, hey, this is brand new, artificial intelligence is brand new. And many of us like on the nerdy side, I'll say, were like, well, actually, this has been around for quite some time, but it is a bit different now, right? Like the power behind it and the speed at which it's actually articulating the information and feedback that it's giving has changed. Much is the same with stablecoin and really digital assets at large, in terms of it just being like kind of the evolution, if you will. And that's really the way I look at it, right? And the point is, like, the fear of AI early on was that, from most folks at least, was you had the doomsday folks, of course, for sure, right? Which may still have some relevance of right, where this is going to ultimately lead. But so many people were just fearful of, like, this is going to kill all the jobs. Job market's going to die. It's going to take away all the jobs. And I think what we're already seeing is that that's just not true. Like some of the folks early on that were saying, think of this as a more progressive tool that's going to enable your workforce to work more efficiently. That's what I'm seeing more and more. Now, to your point on the risk front, you know, I think the same holds true in terms of like, just be careful who you partner with. Make sure that, you know, and I know this is absolutely the compliance alliance world, but, you know, if people aren't sharing the details about technology they're using and how, then that's a red flag. And so, you know, while the same holds true for the digital assets front, certainly the case for AI is just making sure that there's a lot of vendor noise, as we all know. And quite frankly, a lot of people that are claiming from a marketing perspective that they're using AI. And then when you dig underneath, you're like, actually, they're not at all, right? It's just the old world of, you know, programmatic outcomes. I think that's really the takeaway is just, you know, it's not something to be fearful of when controlled properly. And I think that's a lot of what a lot of us are trying to provide are some of those guardrails.
Okay. I really appreciate the way you summarized that. What I'm hearing from you is essentially it's going to come back to vendor management and due diligence, which I get it. It's going to present some new things to look at. Maybe IT departments will have to maybe be a little bit more involved in looking at contracts or processes or whatever than just the compliance team or the business unit or whatever. But at the same time, I appreciate that you've basically summed it down to know your product, know who you're working with, and know your risk tolerance based on that. And I honestly, it was even before, I think, you know, the big AI explosion, but a couple of years ago, there was some guidance that came out for compliance that said, hey, you know, secondary market mortgage purchasers like Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are using like computerized like guidance to maybe review valuations of property, stuff like that. And there was already, that's just one example, but there was already this sense that we need to know what the computers are doing. And hey, human created the computers. That means we can understand what the human created the computer to do. And I understand AI presents some complexities in that situation, but essentially, if you drill it down, is that a fair way of saying we need to understand what the computer is doing and if it's doing what we want it to do?
I think you're absolutely right, right? It's like, you know, if you're using, like in this case, I think we're talking more on the agentic AI front. And if you're using agentic AI to essentially like serve as an employee that's task-based, the difference that we all have that you're covering is the fact that, and humans do this too, right? Just a bit slower in terms of the iterative model, that they're going through all these different permutations of like how to get to the end result most efficiently. Now, the bias that we've seen over the last several years, I think, is what most, like, it's certainly from the regulatory side that people are concerned about. But to your point, if, as long as you've got absolute visibility into those permutations, then you're going to be safe, right? Because, and it's no different in my mind than if you walk into the CFO's office and say, hey, you came to this number, like, how did you get there? It's really the same thing. We're just asking for, in this case, like, you know, these agents to tell us the same thing of like, okay, well, how did you get to this end result? Because just like you've covered, we want to make sure that, you know, when the regulators come in and we've got an exam, that there's not a question of bias or like, well, how did you arrive at this? And the worst thing, as we all know, is for a banker to say, well, I don't know, I just fed it into the system, right? And we know most of our bankers listening aren't doing that, but that's the fear that I think all of us have in our seats of when AI kind of takes too much control.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And I will say something that I think a lot of bankers are good at is digging down and getting to the root of a matter, whether it's a financial issue or something. So I like that parallel you drew in terms of the CFO and the accounting as well. Like it can seem overwhelming, but at the end of the day, you can figure out your accounts. You can figure out whatever is in front of you. I really appreciate that summary. And just like with stablecoin, you have made this feel more practical and approachable to me. So thank you for that summary. I'm going to take that in my mindset as well as I think about these issues. As I said, I think bankers can often feel a little intimidated and innovation is not always something that comes easy, especially to traditional banking services. So I love the work you're doing to help bankers understand not only that it doesn't have to be scary to embrace what's happening in the future, but also that here are practical ways to start working toward that. Is that kind of a fair way of summarizing some of what you do?
Yeah, that's certainly the way that I like to look at it, right? Is like helping the banks kind of bridge the gap and getting to some of these answers more quickly. And much to your point, is just making folks in general feel a little bit more comfortable about where we're going. Because, you know, I think to be very fair is that this is an industry, as we all know, that hasn't really changed a whole lot over such a long period of time and has been very successful at the same time. Right. And that's not true for a lot of other industries, as we know. So when we start seeing a lot of the, I'll call it vendor noise again, that's out there, that's something that we're trying to help cut through and making sure that some of these new progressions aren't so much scary, like you're saying, but more so looked at as like, hey, this is actually going to help us be more operationally efficient moving forward so we can focus on what's next.
I love that. I appreciate what you have done in this, just the past couple of minutes, to share both how you're working with banks to help us understand a little bit about your job, and then some of these really big issues facing banks right now. This has gone so quickly. Our time has gone so quickly for me. We are coming near to the end of our episode. Can we wrap up with maybe a piece of advice you can leave with bankers? I always ask our guests, what is a piece of advice you can give, or maybe what trends should bankers be looking for right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say, you know, the bigger ones kind of going back to the even the beginning of the conversation is like, start small. Don't be scared to kind of like, you know, take some of these chances. You know, I'm a big fan of fail quickly. And as we all know, like nobody likes to fail, but in kind of embracing the model of like, if we try something small, if it's a small proof of concept, then we prove it out, then that's a way to actually get to the larger successes that I think everybody's driving to. And then, of course, the other one is just reiterating, like, use your network, right? Like anything that we can do as an association, Compliance Alliance is a great way of doing that as well. But like working along your peers and learning from the things that they have done or are thinking about doing and knowing that they're the strength in numbers, because I think that's really what's going to set us apart.
Okay. Thank you for that. Those are words to live by. I appreciate that. Rich, thank you for your time today. It has been my honor to talk to you for the past 30 minutes or so. I appreciate your time. Thank you for the work you're doing. Thank you for the inspiration you are giving and the hope you are giving to Main Street bankers across the nation. With that said, we hope you tune in next time. I'm Elizabeth Holtrup, and this has been another episode of Banking Matters.